This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. August is National Immunization Awareness Month. It's a time to increase awareness about immunizations across the lifespan, from infants to the elderly. August is a good time to take a look at your child's shot records before school starts to see if they're up to date. And it's also a good time for adults to review their immunization needs. Do you need a tetanus booster, or perhaps you need a pertussis shot, since you'll be taking care of young children? I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, childcare providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. You know, immunizing children is a significant public health achievement. I can still remember treating children with serious illnesses before vaccines were available, and I'll never forget how awful I felt when I had the mumps when I was 4 years old. I still remember it, and how all of my kids suffered when they had chicken pox, not to mention how hard it was being stuck inside the house for a whole week at least. Even though vaccines have eradicated diseases such as smallpox and reduce the number of cases of measles and meningitis, tens of thousands of people in the U.S. still die from vaccine-preventable diseases. Pertussis, also known as whooping cough, is now an epidemic in California. It's most severe for babies, and more than half of infants who get the disease will be hospitalized. In rare cases, pertussis can be deadly, especially in infants. So far, as we know, 7 babies have died in California this year. Most likely, they were too young to be vaccinated. Today, the doctors are in, and they're here to answer questions about your child's health. Call us with your health concerns, and do let us know if you have a different point of view than our guests this morning. This is a chance to learn more and also have your ideas heard. The lines are open at 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. Or you can email us anytime at info@childhoodmatters.org. Joining us in the studio this morning is Dr. Randy Bergen. He's the Chief of Pediatrics at Kaiser Permanente Walnut Creek and a pediatric infectious disease specialist with Kaiser Permanente Northern California. He trained at Children's Hospital Oakland and Stanford University. He's the clinical lead of Kaiser Northern California's influenza vaccine program. And Dr. Bergen is on the board of directors of the California Immunization Coalition and also is a member of the National Childhood Influenza Immunization Coalition. He's done medical work abroad in Thailand, Liberia, Indonesia, India, Democratic Republic of Congo, and we were just talking earlier, he's just come back also from Haiti. He also works with nonprofits locally, like Family Paths in Alameda County. Dr. Randy Bergen, thank you for joining us again.
That's my pleasure. I'm really happy to be back, Rona.
Thank you. Also with us by phone this morning is Dr. Mark Nathurda. He is a board-certified family medicine physician. After more than a decade of work in clinical practice focusing on HIV medicine, he became the Sonoma County Deputy Health Officer in 2008. He oversees the surveillance of and the response to communicable diseases and the county's immunization program. He also continues to provide consultation and treatment for patients with tuberculosis and hepatitis C. As a member of the California Conference of Local Health Officers, he's working to initiate legislation to revise California's personal belief exemption policy, which allows children who are not vaccinated because of their parents' personal beliefs to attend public schools. He lives in Santa Rosa with his wife and their 3 children. Dr. Mark Nathurda, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, Rona.
I'm glad you're with us. We're going to start off with Dr. Randy Bergen now. Perhaps you can just tell us in the beginning here why you think it's so important that all children are immunized and what you think some of the barriers are to having children protected.
Well, I think that immunizations, as we look at kind of the history of medicine, I feel very strongly that of all the things we've been able to accomplish in Western medicine, certainly in the last century, vaccines have been the safest and the most successful interventions we've really put together. We have significantly decreased the mortality that, that children used to have from many of these contagious diseases. And when you talk about barriers, I think actually one of the main barriers is the success of vaccines over the last 100 years. Many people don't know what measles is like anymore.
Right.
Many people don't know what whooping cough is like anymore. Polio used to have hospitals dedicated to the care of people in iron lungs, and no longer those hospitals exist. So
I still remember, you know, with the Hib vaccine now too, we're seeing a lot less of the meningitis also.
Yes, I think more recently when I was a resident at Oakland Children's, every day of the week we would have a child with Haemophilus influenza type B meningitis somewhere in the hospital.
Right.
That no longer really exists because of vaccinations.
Yeah.
So I think there's been kind of a collective loss of that memory, of that knowledge, both among people that are now the parents, and maybe to some extent also among the physicians, that we're not pushing the vaccines as strongly as we should. But I think more there's just kind of a societal collective lack of memory about how serious those diseases are. And conversely, now with information being disseminated so quickly and in so many different ways, there's so much negative information about vaccines and about other things that I think aren't necessarily delivered in a fair way. And to be perfectly honest, if I might level, you know, any degree of criticism against people, you know, my greatest concerns have to do with where people are getting some of their information. Blogs and websites that really aren't well monitored. And I think, you know, many of our public figures, and I'm afraid people like Oprah Winfrey and Larry King come to mind, in terms of really presenting points of view that are really rather fringe, but doing it in a way that makes people think it's more mainstream.
Well, this is good. I think this is a great place to start this morning, because the question of where to get information is very important in this time right now, because we have an information overload. And we also know that there's often sensationalism that happens in the media. So I think we should also really discuss that. But I think going to your first point about not seeing the illnesses is also very powerful. And I'm hoping that we don't see these again.
I hope right. It does get to that point
I hope so, too. Well, Dr. Netherda, maybe you can weigh in on what Dr. Bergen just said and also talk about the work you're doing to revise the California personal belief exemption policy. Maybe people need to know a little bit more about what that is.
Okay, just a couple comments about what Dr. Bergen said. I completely agree. Public health looks at the implementation of vaccines throughout the world as probably one of the top two greatest achievements of public health, with the other being access to clean water, which unfortunately isn't true in all parts of the world. But it's certainly one of the things that has led to the you know, a tremendous decrease in morbidity and mortality in infants. But I want to stress that these diseases are not gone. They may be low in numbers in the United States, but Dr. Bergen has worked overseas and certainly seen vaccine-preventable disease. My family moved to Namibia for a while in 2006, 2007, and we arrived in Namibia in the middle of a polio epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And we see in the United States on a regular basis people who come back from overseas who bring these vaccine-preventable diseases with them and then can infect numbers of people who aren't fully immunized, particularly in California, where we have a lower than national average of uptake of immunizations for infants. I'm specifically thinking about cases of measles that we see. We get a measles outbreak in a community that may have a low vaccination rate, and it can cause tremendous, tremendous problems for individuals.
Yes.
So we have to remember that they're not gone. They're out there, and we do see them not just from time to time, but regularly. And it's unfortunate that, as Dr. Bergen said, most younger physicians may not have ever seen a case of measles. But It's a truly devastating disease for the individual and for the family. As far as our personal belief exemption work, California has one of the most lax school immunization policies in the country. We're one of, I think it's now 20, maybe 18. It changes regularly, but states that don't require we require children to have immunizations upon entering kindergarten, but families can, if they choose to, simply sign with a simple signature, say, I choose not to have my child vaccinated at this time. That's all it takes. If they don't have their vaccination record or don't want to vaccinate their children for whatever reason, they just sign this simple slot on the back of the school immunization record, and that's it. And that child who is not fully vaccinated can enter school. And school's great. We absolutely need our kids to get to school. However, that child entering school is putting his classmates or her classmates at risk of vaccine-preventable diseases.
Well, I think this is a really important subject, and if people have opinions on this, I'd like them to call. You know, should you have the right to do that as having your child and making those decisions, or do we need to be thinking about other people in the community and that it's not just, it's not only about that personal decision? So I really want to invite people to call in 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. And I think, you know, you raised the point here that I think you're saying it's really not just about an individual child. It's about reducing the spread of disease. So I think we'll take some calls, Dr. Nitharda, and hopefully some people will talk with you and us about what they think about that. The lines are open, 877-372-KIDS, and we'd like to start off this morning with Patina in Oakland. Good morning, Patina.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. So good to hear from you this morning.
Likewise. So I had a question, and it actually directly relates to what you were just speaking about. According to the National Center of Immunizations and Respiratory Illnesses, they said that they've seen a rise of parents opting out of actually having their children vaccinated. There's, I believe, two ways to do it. You can do it for religious reasons or just, you know, personal. We don't do that. And I just wanted to know what your thoughts on that. Or, I mean, how that would affect children, you know, their classmates, just people in general. What are your thoughts on that?
And, Patina, how old are your children?
My daughter is 3 years old.
3 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So, Dr. Nitharda, since you're working on this, why don't you respond first?
Well, I think that you hit on it exactly, Rona, when you said that we need to think about the entire community. You know, we do live as a community. We don't live, you know, in total isolation here. And we have to think that there are some children who can't get vaccinated for medical reasons. And there's another place you can mark on the immunization record saying that you have a permanent medical exemption with a letter from a doctor. Children who are immunocompromised, for example, or children who have some sort of an allergy to components of the vaccine, which although rare, very rare, does occur. So those children cannot choose to be protected. And we have to help those children stay protected. There's many adults in our community who are immunocompromised and are at risk for these vaccine-preventable diseases if they get exposed. So we have to think about those people as well. And we know that vaccines, although they're very good, they're not 100% effective. So even someone who fully vaccinates their child, that vaccine may not have necessarily worked 100% for those children. So those children, who we can't even recognize, are not fully protected. So another child who chooses for whatever reason personally not to be vaccinated, or excuse me,
It's the parent, not the child, who's choosing.
That,
right.
That's important.
Yeah.
It's the parent making that choice.
Yeah. We make those choices for our kids, don't we, until they say no to us and they get older.
And that child's going to grow up and be an unvaccinated adult at some point, unless they choose to go back and get their vaccination.
Dr. Bergen?
Well, yes, I think the point that Dr. Nitharda makes is very important, that I think we all have a contribution to make to our entire society. And I think as a parent myself, that certainly entered into my decisions as well about vaccinating my child and other things. But I think also to bring it down to the individual level, I think that the knowledge base that's there, the sources of knowledge that parents are getting their information from is partly problematic also. I also agree that personal belief exemptions should be modified, and I think one of the ways that we're looking at it, many states require a signature from the physician in order for this personal belief exemption to be accepted.
That shows that there's a discussion between the physician and the parent.
The parents, yeah. The requirement that they need to speak with a physician about vaccines and hopefully be getting more useful information in making their decision.
That's a really good point. Patina, are you doing okay with figuring out getting your 3-year-old vaccinated?
Yes, actually, I stay on top of her vaccinations, and I really try to get them done on time. But, I mean, I do know people who have said for different reasons that they don't do certain ones or don't do it at all. So
yes,
I mean, yeah.
And there is a lot of, discussion, and I think sometimes in a good way we get information, and then sometimes in a bad way we get inaccurate information. But I also know that there are a lot of parents I know who stretch it out a little bit more than what the doctors recommend. So we can keep talking about that this morning of are there ways to ease parents' concerns, the ones who are really concerned, to make it so that it still is safe for everyone. So did we answer your question, Patina?
Absolutely, yes.
Good. And do you ever take your child to Mocha in
Mocha,
Oakland?
No.
Okay.
But
I'm going to give you a free pass to go to Mocha. It's a great place to do art with young children in Oakland. And I'm so happy you called us this morning.
Great. Thanks, Rona. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Patina. Let's take another call now. 1-877-372-KIDS. We're talking with Salome from Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Wonderful.
Good.
I have a comment about the child vaccinations, and I believe they need them. The parents should go ahead and get them because that provides your child with protection from getting sick and possibly, God forbid, death. And I have vaccinated my son when he was growing up because I didn't want my son sick either. So I gave him all the vaccination shots. Me, myself, I grew up in a household where, as you said, they didn't believe in really giving vaccination, and I had chicken pox, so I know how it feels to be in misery and not to be vaccinated. But I believe that we should vaccinate our children because I have done it myself.
Yeah,
and it makes them feel, and it keeps you secure with your child. As health-wise.
Thank you for your opinion on that. I value your opinion, and I appreciate you calling this morning. You have a really good day. Dr. Bergen, I think realistically, we know as parents, we can't protect our kids from all communicable diseases, and our kids do get sick. And I think this is one of those areas where parents learn a lot about doing prevention and also setting limits. Kids don't like shots, but you gotta do it. So are you finding in your practice that you get a lot of questions around this for parents who are worried?
Yes, I mean, this absorbs a great deal of the time in terms of well care visits, especially for the young infant, and rightly so. I mean, I think both from the perspective of the parent, it's one of the most crucial decisions that they'll make in their child's early life, and from the physician's point of view, it's one of the most valuable things they can offer to the parent. So it should devote quite a bit of time should be devoted to it.
And while we're on the subject, if you could just mention right now when we're talking about pertussis and whooping cough, who should be getting immunized for that?
Yeah, whooping cough or pertussis is a respiratory illness that basically all ages can get, but the very, very young seem to have the greatest degree of severe problems. As you alluded to, all 7 deaths in the state of California this year have been in children under 3 months of age, and because the vaccines cannot be begun until 2 months of age, those children can't be protected until 2 months.
And what age do they start getting the vaccine?
2 months of age, they get the vaccine, again, at 4 months and 6 months. A booster is given then 6 months after the 6-month dose, which would be between 12 and 18 months, and then a booster at kindergarten, and then ideally a booster around 11 or 12, and then 10-year boosters after that.
Okay, so we have a sense of what you're doing for your young child, and also we want people to know that if you're going to be around children, you also need, as an adult, perhaps.
Yes, I think that's an important thing to emphasize. In the last few years, a vaccine has been available now for adults that contains protection against diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough. So all adults who have not received that should consider getting that.
Good. So when we come back from our break, we're going to be talking more, taking your questions about immunizations. We'll also talk about any other health concerns you have. So we're talking about your children's health, and in a moment, we'll take your call.
Join the dialogue.
Share your thoughts.
Add your feedback.
Call Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Brought to you in part by First Five Santa Clara County.
Here's this week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. Come out to the Bodega Volunteer Fire Department's barbecue and parade in Bodega. There will be fresh food, live music, and kids games. Today, August 15, from 10 to 5. For more information, call 707-876-3477. That's 707-876-3477. Laugh along with Daffy Dave's comedy show at the Corner Madera Library, Wednesday, August 18, from 11 to noon. For more information, call 415-924-4844. That's 415-924-4844. Enjoy a free family movie in San Ramon. The Doherty Station Library is showing Disney's Princess and the Frog, Friday, August 20, from 7:30 to 9:30. For more information, call 925-973-3380. That's 925-373-3380. Check out the Kerrville Dog Days Festival in Kenwood. There will be fun for everyone in the family. Saturday, August 21, from 2 to 9. For more information, call 707-833-2925. That's 707-833-2925. The Marin County website, Promotores de Marin, is looking for young artists aged 2 to 13 to help create pictures of pride, diversity, and passion. Winners will receive $50. Entries are due by Tuesday, August 31. For more information, call 415-320-5931. That's 415-320-5931. For additional information and more events, visit our website, childhoodmatters.org. And to submit events, email info@childhoodmatters.org. I'm Zan West.
It's never too early to prepare your child for the transition to kindergarten. For many children, the first day of school can be scary. Here are some tips to ease the transition. Read about school. Go to your local library and check out books about starting school. These books can show how other children work through their fears of going to a new classroom. Read these stories with your child and encourage questions. Talk about school. Conversations about school help your child know what to expect and ease fears. Talk about the classroom, teacher, and daily routine. Help build your child's confidence by listening to their fears or doubts. Visit the school. Before classes are in session, plan a fun outing to show your child the school grounds and answer their questions. Kindergarten registration has begun. Call your neighborhood school or district office to inquire about the registration process. For more information on programs for young children, contact your local Bay Area First Five County Commission by visiting firstfivekids.org/bay. Brought to you by your local First Five.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Ron on Childhood Matters.
Have a man at my house.
Today we're talking with Dr. Randy Bergen. He's the chief of pediatrics at Kaiser Permanente Walnut Creek and a pediatric infectious disease specialist with Kaiser Permanente Northern California. And Dr. Mark Natherda, he is a board-certified family medicine physician and the Sonoma County deputy health officer. For folks who are listening this morning on KBBF in Sonoma County, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Also, our friends down in Monterey on K-Ocean, you're waking up. I'm sure you have some questions about your child's health and immunizations. We're going to take another call now. We have Hillary from Mill Valley. Good morning, Hillary.
Hey, good morning, Rona. How are you?
I'm good this morning. How's it going with you and your, how old is she now?
She turned 2 yesterday.
Yesterday. Oh, happy birthday.
thank you. It's a big day.
Wow. What do you want to ask about this conversation or any questions you have, Hillary?
Yeah, I actually have a specific question and then just sort of a general comment. I'll start with a question first, which is, actually, our pediatric practice recommended that we delay receiving the MMR shot until age 3, and so we're pursuing that. And I just wanted to hear, perhaps, from your guest who is residing in Sonoma County, what he's hearing about the presence of measles or mumps in particular in Sonoma County. I live in Marin County, which is close to Sonoma, and I'm just interested in learning if, indeed, there have been outbreaks in his region.
Well, so for people who are listening, MMR is measles, mumps, and rubella, and I remember back in the day we used to give it at around 12 to 15 months. So, Dr. Natherda?
Yeah, hi, thank you very much. I'm curious why the pediatric office recommended delaying the immunization until age 3, but perhaps we can get into that. But we haven't had an actual outbreak or case of measles in Sonoma County for several years. However, we've had a number of scares. There have been a number of outbreaks earlier this year in the Bay Area. It involved an individual who came in on a flight from India, I believe it was, that had active measles and exposed a number of people on the plane who then subsequently exposed people on the ground. Actually, there's been more than one case brought in like that, and then that resulted in several cases in the greater Bay Area. It also resulted in individuals in both Marin County and Sonoma County having to be contacted, tested to see if they had immunity, potentially quarantined if they did not have immunity, and also advising them to get their immunizations. As far as mumps goes, we haven't had a true case of mumps for some time, but there's currently a large outbreak of mumps in New York with several hundred cases in New York, and our concern is that somebody who's unvaccinated from Sonoma County or the Bay Area will travel to New York, contact one of these cases, contract the illness themselves, and then bring it back into our community, which, like Marin, has a fairly high population that's not fully vaccinated. So it's a very interesting question. It's kind of like, in my opinion, almost a ticking time bomb. It's not if it happens, it's when will it happen, because we know that it's going to happen at some point.
Well, Dr. Bergen, what do you recommend at Kaiser right now in terms of when MMRs are given?
Well, I mean, my stance is that the ideal thing to do is to vaccinate children ideally as early as they possibly can against any of the infectious diseases. Measles, mumps, and rubella specifically don't work very well under a year of age because the child is being given maternal antibody from the mother at the time of birth that lasts for a period of time, and the vaccines don't work very well until about a year or 15 months. To my way of thinking, in all due respect to your pediatricians and their advice, they're leaving your child unprotected against these three things for basically 2 years of their lives, and I'm not aware that there's really any medical justification for that. So I would question them long and hard about why they recommend this.
Hillary, was there a reason given?
It was, the suggestion was given to delay it to allow the child's body to mature. And it was also, the advice was given in the context of if there is a measles or mumps or rubella outbreak, then all bets are off and go ahead and immunize your child with MMR, but in the presence of or in the absence of those outbreaks, it is best indeed to wait until after the third birthday.
Yeah, if I might make a comment, there was a fairly sizable outbreak in San Diego with measles, and it was a child that came from Switzerland with measles. The child came to the pediatrician's office and exposed a number of children inside the office of the pediatrician that were children that were primarily under a year of age. With our international jet-setting lifestyle, these exposures can happen in a heartbeat, and to wait for the announcement that there are outbreaks may very well be too late for your children. So I'm not sure that that's the advice that I would give.
And I want to ask, this is a good time to just have you also mention briefly that Kaiser did a study around combining the MMR with the chickenpox vaccine, the V, varicella, and they found what?
Yeah, I think many people have a great deal of kind of misgivings about vaccines because they're not sure that they're necessarily be giving all the correct information, that the government, that doctors, that vaccine companies are not doing their due diligence to make sure that vaccines are safe. And I think this is one important example of a situation where we have done a study. There actually are two potential ways that measles, mumps, and rubella and chickenpox can be given in young children. One is a combined vaccine that has all four things in one, and the other is to give the vaccine separately. And we found that there was a slightly higher rate of higher fevers in children who got this combined vaccine. And as many of your viewers, I think, know, there can be a type of seizure that can develop because of high fevers that infants can get. It's not related to epilepsy. It doesn't cause long-term problems. It's still a scary thing for parents to have to undergo and for the child to have. So there is a recommendation now that if the measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox combined vaccine is given at 1 year of age, that there be a discussion between the pediatrician and the family to make sure that the family is aware of this slightly increased risk of fever.
And you can have it separate also.
And you can have it separate if you choose.
So I think that's an example of at least information coming from research-based...
Not only that the research is there, but that the government is responding to that research by making recommendations that I think are very prudent and in everyone's best interest.
Hillary, we're going to take other calls, but you had a quick comment also you wanted to add.
Yeah, in my experience, what's difficult as a parent is making the right choice. And for example, you're mentioning reports or research. And for example, I've seen multiple reports on this with opposite recommendations produced actually by different governments, like one report from the English-British government on vitamin K shots and one report on the American government on vitamin K shots. And they had diametrically opposed suggestions on the use of vitamin K. And so for me, as a parent consumer, I just find it really difficult to sort through, frankly, all the information that's out there. And I just wanted to make that comment.
Yes, yes.
The Internet does give us access, but it's not just the Internet. It's the groups of people, our international circles of friends in some cases. And I think that it does, it's just very difficult as a parent to make the right choice and to consider not just the American perspective, but perhaps a worldwide perspective.
You know, I'm so glad you said that because, you know, I'm a grandma now and I feel like, often Nurse Rona is also a go-to person and, trying to keep up with what's being said. And, you know, yes, you can go to your pediatrician, but we sometimes don't even know if they're up to date. So Dr. Dotherda, how Hillary's bringing up a really important point here, how to get information.
Well, I think that one place to get information would be to look to the health department, so you can get good information that is kept very up to date from the California Department of Public Health immunization page. You just go to the California Department of Public Health to their website. You can either Google that, or I think it's cdph.ca.gov, and find their immunization information, which has got places for parents to get information, or look at your local health department's immunization page. We have a policy that we get our information just from the CDC or CDPH, California Department of Public Health, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in order to keep it very standardized, because those are the two bodies that we feel that really should be driving what public health does. Dr. Bergen may get information from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is another excellent source,
right,
as well as American Family Medicine or American Family Physician.
Yes, and it's not easy. Hillary, some of these websites are on our page at childhoodmatters.org on our website. The CDC does have a lot of good information. But yeah, I think you're going to continue to have this dilemma, and I don't think that's going to go away, and I really appreciate that you're one of those parents who are thinking and taking it seriously, and I think go back also to your pediatrician and ask a little bit more about putting off the MMR and make the best decision you can. To have some fun, how about some passes to the Bay Area Discovery Museum, Hillary?
You know, we just became members.
Oh, so you did? So let's not give you that. No, we'll find something else wonderful for you, and we'll send it your way. Maybe you'll come to the East Bay, and you could come over to Habitat with us, okay?
Oh, I'd love it. Thank you.
Okay, Hillary, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Pick up the phone and get involved. Call Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 1-877-372-KIDS.
So we're talking about immunizations. We're talking about your child's health. Let's take another call. We have Pramila from Milpitas. Hi, Pramila. Good morning. I think we might have just lost Pramila for a minute. We'll get her back. Dr. Bergen, you had a comment.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that Hillary brought up that kind of wasn't addressed is there clearly are different views of things in other developed parts of the world. I think Europe, in particular, the European countries do have different philosophies about certain things, and I haven't studied it in depth, but I think that our view towards immunizations, I would argue, is a more responsible view. I do not think that we have the corner on the market on all the responsible views. I think that Europe does have a more progressive view in terms of the use of herbal medications. So I think there's definitely things that we can learn from different parts of the world. But, for instance, now as a travel doctor as well, I have to consider immunizing young children early against things like measles if they're traveling to places like Switzerland, because the rates of measles are so high in some Western European countries that those children that travel to those countries are as great a risk of having measles going there as they were many undeveloped parts of the country, parts of the world. So I think that Europe has something to learn from us in terms of their vaccination policies.
Thank you for that. I think we have Pramila back. Pramila from Milpitas is with us. Hi, Pramila. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
So good to hear from you. Do you have a question for us this morning?
Oh, it's not entirely about vaccinations, but about children's health.
Go ahead.
I hope that's okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Some days back, I have a six-year-old, and he got bitten by a bug. And for some days, you know, just the swelling remained. And on Friday, suddenly it kind of popped really big. And I went to the doctor, and she advised, not sure, you know, how to take it. So she advised a strong antibiotic. And
Where was the bite?
On the eye.
On his eye, aha.
On his eyelid.
And did it start getting red under the eye and kind of swollen all around?
Yes, really big time.
Yeah, yeah. So your question is, Pramila?
Is antibiotics, like, okay or not? Given such a situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, as an advice nurse, I remember back in the day, we would see those kinds of infections around the eye, and they get really worried about those. Dr. Bergen?
Yeah, I think the key thing is that normally if there's more just kind of a local reaction from whatever it was that bit your child, that tends to develop fairly quickly. When you have a situation like I think you're describing where there was a moderate amount of inflammation swelling to begin with, it almost was maybe like getting better and then all of a sudden got dramatically worse, that would also make me concerned that we're dealing with a secondary process, which is most likely an infection. So I think given the information you've given given me, antibiotics is a very reasonable thing to consider, and in fact, a very important thing to consider.
Right, and doctors are pretty good these days not trying to overdo antibiotics, because we're trying not to build all kinds of resistance to antibiotics. But when it's something that looks like, as Dr. Bergen just said, that especially around the eye, they do get worried, and it seems like a real standard kind of treatment for something like that. And you want to watch and make sure it's getting better and going down. Is he doing okay, Pramila?
Yes, except, yes, he has, watery eye, that particular eye.
Yeah.
He doesn't have pain, but just the eye is big time swollen.
Yes, and that part should go down over time, and it should be fine. Take some pictures so you can tease him about it a few years later, okay? And we're about to go to a break, but just quickly I want to add, I don't even have time to ask you. So take good care, Pramila, and it's good to hear from you. We're going to talk some more when we come back about children's immunizations and your child's health. Give us a call.
And get involved.
Call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
More with Rona Renner after this.
Did you know that in San Francisco and the East Bay, one in every five children has been diagnosed with asthma? In fact, asthma is the most common reason kids are hospitalized in the Bay Area. At kidsdata.org, you can learn more about issues that affect the health and well-being of children in the Bay Area. Kidsdata.org provides easy-to-access information and resources for those who influence kids' lives. You can find data by region, topic, or demographic, such as ethnicity or age. Visit kidsdata.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the Lucille Packard Foundation for Children's Health.
One of the hardest things a parent faces is how to set clear limits with love. Here are some tips to keep in mind. Have clear rules and expectations. Have reasonable consequences for misbehavior and acknowledge respectful behavior. And try to understand why your child is acting out. Is it stress or anxiety? For more information and tips on how to discipline your child, visit www.childhoodmatters.org. And remember that world peace begins at home. This message is brought to you by the David B. Gold Foundation.
Research shows children who spend time reading with their families start school better prepared. Here are some fun and helpful tips on reading aloud to children. Children begin learning the first day they are born. Read daily to children. This will help them develop communication and thinking skills. Also, ask questions relating to the story you're reading together. Children can point to colors or objects and follow along by pointing to words. And visit your local library. Involve children by letting them choose the books you read together. Make sure the books you choose increase in difficulty as children get older. Remember to make reading fun. Write your own story together or act out scenes from your favorite book and enjoy reading everywhere. Challenge children to read street signs while driving or read labels while grocery shopping. For more tips on reading aloud, contact your local Bay Area First Five County Commission by visiting firstfivekids.org/bay. Brought to you by your local First Five.
This is Nurse Rona with news for parents, providers, and everyone who cares about kids. Childhood Matters is now podcasting. So many people have told me they love our show but can't listen on Sunday mornings. Now it's easy to get our shows on your iPod or MP3 player and take us with you. Sign up for podcasting today at childhoodmatters.org. And if you or someone you know speaks Spanish, click on the Nuestros Niños logo and learn about our sister show in Spanish with Dr. Marisol.
Physical activity supports good health whether you are 7 years old or 70 years old. So take Grandma or Grandpa's hand and head outside for a walk. The Health Trust is committed to making sure people, both young and old, can lead long and healthy lives. Visit www.healthtrust.org to learn more about our Healthy Aging Initiative and how you can help make your community healthier.
Continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
We're talking about immunizations today and other health issues. You know, you have three medical professionals here with you this morning, but we're also interested in what you're dealing with, what you're thinking, what information you're getting, what you're confused about. Give us a call, 1-877-372-KIDS. We have Dr. Randy Bergen with us, Chief of Pediatrics at Kaiser Permanente Walnut Creek, and a pediatric infectious disease specialist with Kaiser Permanente Northern California, and Dr. Mark Nathurda. He's a board-certified family medicine physician and the Sonoma County Deputy Health Officer. Let's take a call now from Demetria from Oakland. Good morning. Hi, you're with us. Demetria, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Good morning to you. You have a question for us?
Yes, my question is, are older adults such as myself, I'm 42,
you're not that old, are you? Young adults, you mean.
Oh, okay, thank you. I was just wondering, back in the day, you know, when I was younger, my mom had got us immunized for mumps and measles. That's, you know, the old diseases that are just now reappearing. I was just wondering, what about those of us who were immunized back in the 70s? Are we still protected?
Great question. Really great question. Dr. Mark Nathurda, you deal with this all the time.
Yeah, that is a great question. You know, there are certain diseases that we get immunized against as children that we need boosters when we get older. For Dr. Bergen brought up the fact that we believe everybody should have a whooping cough or pertussis vaccine right now, which is given in conjunction with both tetanus and diphtheria vaccines. So that's a good example of one where we do need periodic boosters. Of course, everybody needs a flu shot every year. But for measles, mumps, and rubella, the immunizations that we get as children, those are such, the way the body reacts to those vaccines is so good that actually provides lasting immunity. So you don't actually need a booster for those vaccines. For most of us, polio is another example where, unless you're traveling to a place where polio is endemic, that's a vaccine that we don't need boosters as adults. But the best way to figure it out is to talk to your physician if you're going to be traveling someplace, or talk to your physician about your immunization history and check to see that you are up to date on all your immunizations. Don't think just about the flu shot. We got to think about all the immunizations that are available out there to protect both ourselves and the community.
Great question, Demetria. And, you know, you should be getting a well visit, you know, well check with your doctor at least once or twice, once a year or every 2 years. So this is a good time to check that out and see what you need. I know I get my tetanus shot every 10 years unless I have an injury, and then it's sooner. But it's really important for all of us. And again, with whooping cough, we need to be protected so that we can also protect the children around us in our life, so that we're not passing on an illness to the very young children. So thank you for your call this morning.
You're welcome. I want to say one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think all parents should go ahead and get the immunization, because what was good for the goose was good for the gander.
I love it. I hope you'll call us again.
Why not for them?
Thank you, Demetria. I hope you'll call back again. Great to hear from you this morning. Let's take a listen now to what some parents have to say about getting their children immunized.
I'm assistant producer Felsha Zuschlag here at Habitat Children's Museum, talking with parents about children's health. Have you heard much about the pertussis or whooping cough outbreak here in California? And what have you heard, and who have you heard it from?
I've heard a little bit that there is an outbreak.
I've heard from the news that there is a whooping cough epidemic.
I've heard things online, and there's a commercial that's on all the time right now about making sure that adults get it, the vaccine as well. And then I heard about it from my pediatrician, and that it's not necessarily like a mass epidemic. The cases were in the low numbers, but it was enough to cause attention here in California.
I've heard it from my child's pediatrician, and he just gave me information that it was going around.
Will anyone in your family be receiving the pertussis vaccination?
We're expecting another baby, so my husband's going to get his booster shot.
Absolutely not.
No, just my daughter.
As a parent, have you had any fears or reservations regarding vaccines recommended for your children?
I think the benefits outweigh the risks for the vaccinations. In general, it seems to be pretty clear evidence that vaccines have prevented a lot of diseases, and the risks of these diseases are pretty high. So
we took a couple of vaccines based on the advice of our pediatrician. After I did my own independent research, I realized that vaccines are far more dangerous than they are laid out to be by most medicine professionals, so we decided against it.
This last set of vaccines, the doctor told me that there was an option to have either 3 shots or 4 shots. And we went for the 4 shots because there was one where if you did them both at once, there was a higher likelihood, it's still pretty minimal, but a higher likelihood that she would have a febrile seizure. So we went ahead and opted for the 4 shots.
No, because I suppose the pediatrician knows that the doctors...
For Childhood Matters, I'm Felsha Zuschlag.
Thank you, Felsha, and thank you to parents. You know, we're going to try and fit in one more call, but Dr. Bergen, can you just respond to what you heard there?
Well, you know, the variety of comments. I mean, I certainly, the one that kind of piqued my interest the most was that we're not providing safe information about vaccines, and I would really question whether where that viewer was getting their information. Again, I agree that there's a lot of types of information out there that you do want to do your own research, but nowadays with the internet being so kind of unregulated, it's very important to know your sources.
Yes.
And I still think that the government, the state, the counties, American Academy of Pediatrics, those kind of sites are sites that really do genuinely look for your child's best interests.
We have a caller, Bill from San Jose, and Bill, I have about a minute for you, so go ahead and ask your question, and then we'll be saying goodbye pretty soon. Good morning, Bill.
Thank you, Hersona. Very quickly, I just want to make a comment.
Yeah.
I was born in the 1950s, and my family was well-to-do at the time. We had the best medical and dental care available, always the new vitamins and health foods that were coming out at the time. I experienced chickenpox, measles, and mumps, and you usually experience those between the ages of 7 and 10. Now, there was no immunization that I knew of. You could get an antidote from your pediatrician who in those days made house calls. What I do remember are the polio sugar cubes in the early 1960s.
Right.
The school.
Right.
And medical technology has come such a long way. I implore parents to take advantage of the system and the services available because we need healthy-minded and body children who have good educations and good values because they're the future. And
well, you said that so well and so fast, Bill. I hope we hear from you again. Thank you for saying that. We all got those diseases. We suffered. We got through it. But boy, let's have healthy kids. You know, it's time to wrap up here. Dr. Mark Natherda, a final word from you. I'm just so happy to have you with us this morning.
Thank you very much, Rona. This is such an important topic. I really appreciate you addressing it. The thing to remember is that, you know, vaccines exist because they were put in place because they prevent diseases that kill children.
Yes.
And these are not simple rashes and fevers. These are diseases that can cause very significant morbidity and mortality in children and can lead to deaths. And we've seen 7 children die from whooping cough this year. We need to protect
yes. Thank you so much. And if people are listening in Sonoma County, you know you have a great health officer there. Dr. Bergen, flu shots, as I say goodbye to you, flu shots coming up for Kaiser.
Yeah, I flu shots are, it's flu shot season in the fall. I think the main thing I would like to emphasize is there really has been a change. Vaccines in pregnancy are safe. Whooping cough, influenza vaccines protect the mother and the baby.
Thank you so much. Let's take a listen now to our community report with Lacey Daniel on school budget cuts. And I'm great to talk to you all this morning.
I'm associate producer Lacey Daniel, and this is the Childhood Matters Community Report. It's nothing new that Californians are waiting for an overdue state budget. This year, parents are scrambling for ways to cope with proposed cuts that include shorter school years, less summer school and extracurricular activities, and the closures of preschools around the state. The uncertainty of what may come has low-income parents looking for creative ways to find childcare. This week I spoke with Vivian Poe, a reporter at New American Media, who has been covering the effects of education budget cuts on parents.
I actually come across a few parents, and one Latino single mother told me that she can only go to work as a house cleaner because 3 of her sons are attending one of the childhood development centers within her neighborhood in Oakland. But since that child development center might be closed, she has to give up her work and a few more bucks for them. It's a few more bucks, and it's going to make it very hard.
What sort of alternatives do parents have when these preschoolers or summer schools are cut?
Interestingly enough, actually, parents are being very creative. And when I was interviewing one Chinese parent, and she's also a parent coordinator within the Chinese community in San Francisco, she was doing parent group together that have like 4 to 5 working parents in a group. And whenever the school it's closed on the certain days that they have furloughs for the teachers, then they would have one parent taking, you know, one day of vacation, then she or he can take care of all other parents' children. Then, you know, they can visit the museums, going to the parks, or plan around things that they can learn during that day, so they won't have their kids just stay at home when the school is closed on that day.
That was Vivian Poe of New American Media. To learn more about the proposed budget cuts, visit the last show's page on our website, childhoodmatters.org. For Childhood Matters, I'm Lacey Daniel.
Thank you to our guests and all of our listeners. I'm grateful to our team, senior producer Zan West, producers Lacey Daniel and Felsha Zuschlag, Lorenzo Pasola at the controls, and Peter B. Collins of Collins Media Services. I'm forever grateful to my children, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. This is Nurse Serona saying goodbye until next week. And parents, remember, spend time with your kids and don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media.
We are family. Get everybody and sing.
Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.